Hey everyone, welcome to We Suck at Adulting. This episode is a great episode as we're going to get you in touch with your food from start to finish. Farm to table has become a buzzword in American society, but we're going to talk to the people who actually grow food and have a project that can see you get food directly from a farmer that you know, that you support. It's called Community Supported Agriculture. So I'm sitting down today with Corinna and Kurt Bench. Kurt is your farmer's name if you support Shared Legacy Farms, who I'm talking to today on this episode of We Suck at Adulting. All right, everybody, we are back. I am sitting here taking graciously the time of Kurt and Corinna Bench, who have invited me out to Shared Legacy Farms. I got to look out. There's people out working the farm field right now, just next to the house. So we are excited to be here. Thank you guys for having me. And I just want to know, first off, can you give us just some biographical information for people who are new to understanding Shared Legacy Farms, who you guys are, and how you got here?
We are a small 20-acre farm here in Elmore, Ohio. We started the farm in 2008. I grew up on a farm in Curtis, Ohio, a specialty crop farm, and have a love of the land my entire life. Went to Ohio State and went to school. There wasn't enough room to come back to the farm, so I went to Chicago for a bit and worked at a wholesale plant nursery out there for 7 years. Gained a ton of knowledge on how to run a business, and different things about labor management and whatnot, everything. So was able to really get a feel for like how to take a business that next step. Wanted to come back home eventually, wanted to come back home and farm, and just never knew how I could really do that. And by chance, I found this guy volunteered for a CSA farm out as Heritage Prairie Farm, I believe it was called. Mm-hmm. A gentleman out there, and he graciously took me underneath his wing, and I volunteered there for probably, I would say, 5 to 6 months or so, and I helped him out. He was a retired IT computer guy and had no idea about growing, so I was able to help him with the growing side of things, and he sort of explained to me the concept of this community support agriculture marketing kind of tool. And so that's how I was introduced to CSAs out in Chicago. We were just west of town, so we were west of town in the Fox River area, about 40 miles outside of Chicago, but it's all Chicagoland.
Yeah,
it's
right.
It's a big town. So was there, and the guys, we were bumming around in his little Honda Civic, and he had this book on his dashboard called The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan.
It's a great book.
And he threw that on my lap.
There's a recommendation that we can throw
in
there.
Put that in the show notes.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
He said, read this book, kid. It's going to change your life. And it did. It changed my life. It really explained the background story behind all of big agriculture and why we do things, why agriculture is the way it is today. All the stuff that was happening through, after World War II, just gave you a good perspective of like why things are where they are today.
Okay.
Cultural practices and whatnot. So went from there, met my wife Corinna at church out there. We decided to come back home. So we came home with no job, freshly married, and a kid on the way. And we want to start a business.
Oh.
So we started a lot of big life changes at that point in time. So we came back. I got a job at ADM at the big elevator downtown. Which supported my family, and then we started farming our first year, 2008. We had 12 customers that first year,
and we decided to follow the CSA model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's how it all began.
So from there, we had 12 customers that first year. We made a lot of mistakes because I had experience with growing a lot of Solanaceae type crops, which are the summer crops of like tomatoes, peppers, muskmelons, cucumbers, sweet corn, those kind of things. I had no idea about onions, carrots,
lettuce,
turnips, lettuce, all those different things that we raised. Mm. We now raise 30 different crops now.
Wow.
So it was a huge learning curve for us. And we had some awesome, we still have probably two or three core customers from that first year that are still with us that saw us through those hard learning years that just stuck by us and really believed in us as a family farm. So that was really, really cool.
Corinna, did you have a history in agriculture, or you just got driven along?
I had absolutely no history in agriculture. Okay. In fact, I grew up in the suburbs of San Antonio, Texas, and I didn't really grow up eating super great healthy food. I mean, I was the product of a processed food family. And
right.
So when I married a farmer, it was a huge learning curve for me as well, coming out to the field and seeing how things grow. I remember being amazed the first time I saw a broccoli plant go to seed. We never harvested the top of it, and it kept growing, and it burst into flower, and it turned into this huge tower. And I turned to Kurt, and I'm like, is that normal? What is that? So every season there were, and continue to be, there are new discoveries that I make that are just so innate to him, having grown up around plants all the time. And to me, it's like, I don't think most people know this.
Right.
I can't wait to share that. And that's how I slowly over time, initially when we first got the business started, I was kind of hands off. I didn't know how I fit in. I was raising our young baby at the time. But as our business has grown, I feel like my role has turned into one of being the teacher. And I have a unique perspective. I know what our customers are going to be fascinated by because I used to be them.
Right.
And so I can anticipate what they're going to want to know, what they don't know already, what would interest them. And I'm the storyteller of the farm. I can okay. figure out what we need to talk about, not just how to cook, but hey, what's fascinating about how things grow in the field.
And that's a really key part right there, is that we each have our own wheelhouses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we critique once in a while to each other to keep ourselves on track, right? The overall big business plan, we're heading on the right path, but we keep to ourselves and we make sure we're doing our thing. And that is our strength right there. She's really good at what she does and I'm really good at what I do, and we can stay out of each other's hair.
Good. Well, yeah, part of the reason I want to talk to you guys for this podcast is to talk about that culture that I know we can get into a little more about not understanding your food, not understanding where it comes from. Mm-hmm. Before we were starting, I even took a second with Kurt and I said, you know, I go to the grocery store, I buy a can of corn, and I'd have no concept of where that comes from or how that works and or what kind of process takes that in. But before we get into that, can you talk to me about, we've said CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, a couple of times. You said you went and worked for and helped one before starting one here. How does the CSA model work? What should people know about it who have no idea what a CSA is?
Sure. So CSA is a partnership that you enter into with a very specific farmer. And it's kind of like a subscription box concept. So we like to talk about it as if it were a membership club. People pay a fee up front at the beginning of the season before the farmer actually even gets plants in the ground in some cases, and makes an investment in the farm like a shareholder and says, I am coming and partnering alongside with you for this season. And then in return, the farmer begins to plant the crops, and when they are ready to harvest, prepares a box of produce, whatever happens to be in season that week, and puts together this subscription box and then brings it to a pickup site around town. So we have 5 different sites in our case, but it's different for different farmers or different CSA farms. And then the customer will meet us in person and we get to hand that box to them, have some kind of conversation. It's an opportunity to develop a relationship with your farmer. And then they take that home and make a delicious meal out of it. And I think one of the other things that a CSA does really well, so it doesn't just provide great produce, but it provides that relationship with the farmer that I can shake your hand, I can look you in the eye every week, I can feel that food security, which you don't necessarily get if you're going to the grocery store and getting something, you know, there. You don't know exactly where that came from. But we also provide the training. That's kind of the third piece. We teach people how to eat the food. So we give you recipes and meal plans so you know what to do with that box when you take it home.
So that was one of your guys' I guess it's a marketing tool, but it's actually a really cool thing is on your website it says, my farmer's name is Kurt, which I think is a really neat thing.
Yeah.
And people can know their farmer and be present. How many members do you guys have currently?
We service just shy of 400 households.
400 households.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So 400 households.
Well, there's actually more because some of those people will share a share with someone. So
right.
It's probably closer to 500 or 600, I would guess. So,
but at least 400 households they know their farmer's name and they know where the food on their table.
Yeah, and they
came
have an
from.
Opportunity to come out to the farm as well. So many CSAs will provide farm events. They'll have workshops. We have something called Pesto Fest where they can come out and pick their own basil and make pesto right here on site and freeze it, put it in bags, and then take it home and have it all winter long.
Wow!
So we really try to create opportunities for them to meet to see this as their farm and meet their farmers.
How do you manage that selection? Because I feel, once again, in 2017, we look out there. If I want bananas tomorrow, I can have bananas tomorrow. It doesn't matter if they grow in this area, I can have them tomorrow. Same thing with, you know, I think of strawberries, things like that. You guys are going sort of back to how food used to be, which I think a lot of us have forgotten how that used to be. So how do you manage that selection to keep people interested and work with that?
Right. So that's that convenience thing, right? A lot of consumers today, that convenience piece, they want to go to the grocery store and be able to buy strawberries or bananas any day of the year. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we're taking that step back and saying strawberries should not be available every damn day. Right. So we're saying, OK, so we're taking a step back and we're saying what is available in season in Ohio, in particular, you know, spring, summer, fall kind of product and some winter products, too, we're storing now. So we're, like I said, our first year we had no idea. We just tried to put a lot of stuff in the ground and see what we couldn't kill. But now we've got a basic formula now that we follow. There's a lot of things that are up front that are greens. There's not a lot of heavy type products. Heavy products would be like a broccoli or like carrots or a heavy fruiting kind of product. There's a lot of greens. There's some peas, different herbs, some cabbages and whatnot that are fast growing. Radishes are fast growing in spring. So some of those things that all depends on what is in season, what likes this climate this time of year.
Right.
So I can't grow, for instance, arugula in the summer because it's just too daggone hot. A lettuce is another thing in the summer. It gets too hot. It won't germinate properly or it won't grow. It'll become too bitter. So it's one of those things we as organic farmers are trying to work with Mother Nature. So we're not trying to, we push some limits sometimes on, like we have some high tunnels. We're trying to extend the seasons on the front half and on the back half. But we're trying to really focus on walking beside Mother Nature and not push, you know, not trying to force something into Mother Nature, if that makes any sense.
That makes perfect sense because I feel like as a society, that's what we've been doing for the longest time is I want arugula today and it doesn't matter if it's the 4th of July or whatever. Mm-hmm. I want my arugula. And so I think it's really neat. I see it as an obstacle, but I also see it as a really cool opportunity to teach people, like, this is what you're supposed to eat in the winter.
Because a lot of folks, like, over the last, say, 10, 20 years or so, have developed food habits that they see these cool recipes in a magazine or whatever, and then they want to go and make that recipe.
Right now.
Even though it's not, you know, a lot of those products may not be in season right now. So we're changing this whole thing. You know, upside down kind of thing, where we're taking this as it's a food adventure, where we're giving you products to sort of like a Christmas and June kind of thing, where here's what you get, figure out how to do it, figure mm-hmm. out what to make with this
right.
stuff.
Right.
We give you guidance, we give you a roadmap, but then you get to riff off of it. Yeah. So,
but that's the exciting thing. It's like art, right? So you have like every time you're like, wow, what's going to be in the box this week? How can I be creative with this? Or mm-hmm. and now with Corinna doing that new tool that she's producing now, we're going to be so much farther advanced. We're going to give those customers so much more information that's not too hard to digest. You know, where it's like, hey, I can figure this out. You know, I easy little steps. Like a whiteboard on your refrigerator to say, okay, this is stuff I got this past week. I need to use these things right away. Sorting things out. So this stuff on the left-hand side of the refrigerator is new. This stuff on the right is old. Just simple things like that we've gained from customer feedback that are going to make people so freaking successful this year.
And I think that's real neat, too, because it takes us, once again, a lot of this is a conversation about relationship with food. So right. if I have a bunch of radishes this week and I don't want to just eat diced radishes, you know, coming up with, okay, how can I make that more interesting? How can I do something new with that?
You can roast them or you can, so many different things you can do with them.
But as a society, I think we're just more like, oh, I'll just go get something else.
It is. It's, I think people have really, convenience has trumped everything else right now. People's lives are busy and they want to be able to get a meal on the table in 30 minutes and or less. And or they're running around taking their kids to all these different events, soccer practice, and they have to eat in the car. So this idea of being able to create a slow, you know, slow food movement, being able to create a meal at your table and sit down and take the time to eat it, I don't think that's as common as it used to be. And so we want to try and bring that back. We want to baby step people back into that lifestyle and remind them how food used to be eaten, how it used to be enjoyed, and show them that it's possible to do that. And I think that your meal experience becomes more rich when you take the time.
It's not just the food, right? It's sitting down as a family and conversating. That's where we sit with our boys, and our boys like trying to mow down things and like get out of, you know, get off the table. Like, no, How was your day at school? This is the time where you live your life. Your every day is a gift, right? So we're like, mm-hmm. we got to take advantage of that and just sit down and really slow down. And it's hard for us as a farm family during season to do that. It's crazy. We don't eat very healthy sometimes during the season because we're just running around with our heads cut off.
It's good to know that stress still translates to the farm roofs.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned specifically that you guys are an organic farm. You were recently certified organic. As a consumer, I know I go to the grocery store and I see things labeled as organic. And oftentimes that seems like it's just a marketing word. It has nothing to do with, you know, an actual standard. So I feel like that gets a little tricky because I see a lot of things labeled organic. What does it mean for you guys to be certified organic farmers?
Certified organic is we're USDA certified organic. So it's an actual certifier. A third party will come out. Our certifier is OFA. They will come out and actually come out and certify us. So they'll come through and go through all my records, all my seed records, rotation records, fertility records. So when I use compost, whatever, everything that I do has to be on paper. If it's not on paper, it never happened. So they're coming out to make sure that I'm using the correct seeds, the correct fertility type products, the correct rotations, and the correct type of systems and or management type tools. Make sure I'm like cleaning. If I'm sharing equipment with another farm that's not organic, I need to clean that equipment off before I use it on my farm, so I'm not transferring weed seed and or other things that from that conventional farm. So from a consumer standpoint, like if you don't see that USDA label, that seal, that green and white seal, it is not organic. It's just a word on that product saying, yeah, come by me because I'm saying I'm organic. So without that seal, it doesn't hold as much weight.
Yeah.
For us, we weren't certified previous year because we had that integrity and that open door policy with our customers. Like we had direct contact with all of our customers. Where our sole income was pretty much from a CSA model where they could come and see what I did. I had nothing to hide, so they can, you know, I had that direct contact. And one of my friends, my farmer friends, were part of another or a multi-farm CSA in Columbus. He's like, you know, how will it hurt you to get yourself certified? It's only going to open up more doors for you. And he was right. It was just, you know, I've already have all the record keeping from the previous 10 years, whatever. Just a matter of following through and getting the proper documentation organized for the certification. So the next question, like, you know, you said that people go to the grocery store and like look for certified or organic stuff. Like the stuff in the grocery store is still certified organic. You've got to have that seal, but the farming practices may be different, right? So say I'm a certified organic farm in California and I'm raising 1,000 acres of carrots.
Right.
There's a different management practice that's happening there. They're following all the rules, you know, all, you're dotting all their I's, crossing all their T's. But when you're covering that much larger of an acreage, you're not really taking care of the soil quite as well as you can on a smaller size. And I don't know how to really mm-hmm. explain that, but we have, you know, when you're, so we're 20 acres and half that is in cover crops. So we're only farming like 10 acres of actual vegetables. So we're able to actually get out there and our goal is to grow good soil because good soil grows plants, good plants, yeah. healthy plants that are resistant to pests and disease. So that's our main goal as an organic farm, you know, work with Mother Nature. Like how can we keep that soil biology, get that going and keep it thriving throughout the entire year? So it's a thing of scale, I think. It's the same thing for like conventional farms. If you're a small conventional grower, and versus a large conventional grower, just the scale of things is so large. You have, you know, on a small farm, like my parents, they have, you know, probably 3 staffers that help plant and harvest products on their farm. And if you go to a large scale farm, they have sometimes 100 to over 1,000 people, like in California farm, for instance. But that's all the convenience. We as consumers have pushed for that because we want cheap food, convenient food. So that's why all the vegetable production that used to be in small location areas, like there used to be a bunch of small farmers in this area. It's great soil here. But all that has moved to California because it's all consolidated in these large growers that produce it cheaply and produce it conveniently. So you can get your head lettuce any day of the year and right. you can get it for cheap.
But shipped across the country,
shipped
you
across
lose.
Across the country, so you're yeah. paying. So that's one thing we really, man, yeah. I'm going to get on a soapbox here, but that we talk about the actual cost of food.
Mm.
You know, what's the actual cost of that product coming across the entire continent, right, from California coming to Ohio or to the East Coast? What's the social cost of like all the migrant staff and everything that's used to harvest that product? A lot of the things that we will reuse on the farm sometimes will get thrown away.
That quote unquote cheap produce to come all the way across the country, there's actually a large cost attached to it.
So all that stuff, you know, all that water, it's all mountain water, right? So it's all water coming from the mountains. All that irrigation water, it's desert out there. It used to be right. a desert where they farm now. So they're farming in a desert. So
that water will one day run out, right. and then we'll realize, oh, that's
yeah,
that was an expensive price
not,
to pay.
It's
for
not
my...
sustainable.
And that's going back to your talk about working against sort of Mother Nature rather than for. They basically decided, hey, look, this is where we want to farm.
Right.
We're going to make it farmable.
We're going
right.
to cut some corners now so that we can get it
yeah.
at a cheaper price. And one day our future generation will pay that price.
Yep.
So we're getting cheap food now whenever you want, but one day your kids won't.
Okay, so your family and mine, we both live in this fairly rural area in Elmore. But even I feel, I literally drove like 2 minutes to get here, and I feel completely disconnected from farm life. When you're meeting with your members or you're talking to people about what you do, how strong is that disconnect, and is it stronger? Because I know you guys service Toledo as well. Where do you find the biggest disconnects, or is it really, does it just vary? How do you feel people are disconnected from what you guys are doing out here?
Yeah.
It's not different from folks in Toledo to folks living here in Elmore. People
really?
Have no idea they have probably one of the largest organic farms in their back door.
Yeah,
right
a lot
here.
Of people in Elmore don't know we're here, and that may be partly our fault. We're not really good about messaging to our local community as much as we can, but I would agree. I think that the people, even in our own backyards, many of them, maybe the older generation, I wouldn't say the older generation, but the people who are in their 40s, 30s and 40s, it's more of an age thing. So if you're in that 30s and 40s age group or younger, I think that you probably don't know. You've lost touch with how food is made, and you're maybe not aware of the journey that it goes through. I think that especially people in the suburbs, and we don't have a lot of people in the city. I don't really see Toledo as a city. The way New York or Chicago
right.
is, right?
It's starting to transition to that. Yeah. There's more downtown people coming downtown to live. There.
But we have families in the suburbs that when they come out to the farm, they join our CSA because they want their kids to be exposed to have the opportunity to come out to a farm and really run on the land and see what this lifestyle looks like. I would think, too, though, I think people come into our CSA or they think about organic farms and they imagine this idyllic scene of the red barn and the farmer with his cow.
Cows.
And, you know, if they would go out to these giant farms in California or, you know, the mega farms, they would soon see that is not what agriculture in America is really about.
And we don't want to pick on California alone.
Yeah.
It's
California.
Everywhere.
No. Well, that's a pretty seamless transition. I'm just going to skip ahead to a conversation I wanted to have. For my generation, I feel like a lot of information has come out recently about that style of farming, that, you know, industrial farming, big farm, by watching basically documentaries on Netflix. We talked mm-hmm. a little bit about whether it's Food Inc. or I think there's another one, Forks Over Knives, that kind of thing, that sort of gets into that for especially meat production, but also for, you know, produce production. And when we see that, I mean, my real question is just, what are we supposed to do about that? Is big farm agriculture so ingrained in our society? Can we come back? Or is this the baby steps, like you said, with the CSAs?
For consumers, you vote with your dollars, right? So if you buy that convenient milk, meats, vegetables, whatever, at the grocery store, then you're going to support the larger farms. And we are not... I mean, it takes large farms to feed the world.
Yeah,
so
right.
We cannot.
I think it's both.
It's mm-hmm. it's got to be a mixture of both, right? But everybody's got to be more, I'll say, more integrity driven, where they're they're really worried about all the things we just talked about, like the environment, the actual end result consumer, not just producing. Because a lot of farmers, they want to do the best thing. You know, they're sort of caught in between. Big business, big agribusiness has sort of put them into a spot where they're going to grow commodities. They're not growing diverse crops anymore. They're growing 2 to 3 crops, and that's it. So they're growing corn, soybeans, wheat, and then possibly some animals once in a while. And so if you look at small farms in the 1940s or 50s, they were very diverse farms, and they were small farms. And they were very self-supportive because they had to feed themselves first, right?
Right.
So from that point, then they just diversified themselves. But today, we have these large farms that they're producing cheap, you know, convenient food.
Yeah.
So if you want to go to a grocery store and you want to buy cheap, convenient food, you're voting. You may not know it, but you're supporting large agriculture right there.
Mm.
So if you really want to support the local farm movement, the organic movement, you got to talk with your dollars, vote with your dollars.
Yeah.
And you seek those people out. People are out there. There's people out there doing everything you need to eat is in Northwest Ohio. It's here. Mm-hmm. You just got to look.
We just don't know it. Yeah. Yep.
Wouldn't you say though, Kurt, that that I feel like our kind of style of agriculture, like this sort of product, is kind of a premium product, and in some ways, it isn't really a financial option for people who don't make a lot of money. And that sometimes makes me kind of sad, because those are probably the people that need most to
right.
eat healthy food. And they don't have, you know, we talk about food deserts in the cities, and they don't have access to fresh produce a lot of times. But even if they did, would they be able to use their disposable income to pay for it? Or would they have to choose something else because something else takes precedence? So, you know, organic food is more expensive. And so if somebody only has so much money and they have to choose between a carrot that's this much and an organic carrot that's this much, they're going to choose
right.
the cheaper food. And I don't blame them. I make those kinds of decisions too. So a CSA tends to attract a certain kind of customer, and they tend to be foodies. They tend to be people who really value great ingredients, and they love to cook. And so because they value that so much, they're going to put their dollars towards things they value.
And it doesn't have to be like how do I want to say it? All in or all out kind of deal. You can still support a local farm on a small scale, you know, through
totally.
Farmers markets, and not, you know, cause we're the same way. We're not totally organic. You don't, if you go into our cupboards, you're not gonna find organic cereal, all that kind of stuff. Okay. We're real people, right? We're realistic.
And I shop at Aldi's, you know,
yeah.
I'm not saying it's all or nothing.
It's a fine mix, right? I mean, it's real life. So you gotta be able to mix it and find what's that right mix for you. Is it buying local eggs? You know, maybe you just buy local eggs from the neighbor kid or something like that, or the neighbor farm, and that's how you're supporting a local farm kind of deal. It doesn't have to be everything in your pantry. Mm-hmm. It has to be local.
Or just being an educated consumer. I think that would be one of my goals. If you want to continue to make that choice to go and, you know, support the big farms, I do that sometimes too. That's okay. But as long as you know what the cost is later on, you know, if you're willing
right.
to make that transaction now with an educated mind, then that's fine.
See, that's perfect though, because I feel like a lot of the people I came across, whether they went vegan or whether they went organic or whatever, you know, whatever diet decisions they've made for themselves, they're often all or nothing. You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, you bought a box of Cheerios. You broke code. Yeah. And so it's good to hear from the farmer, you know, here that you guys have to make those decisions too.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily as easy as just, oh, we're going organic tomorrow. You know, there's a real world out there. And so once again, going back to what you guys said early, if we can start with baby steps.
It should be a journey.
Yeah.
It should be a journey. Just like life.
Okay, you mentioned specifically before comparing a CSA to sort of a subscription box. I know there's a lot of popular programs out there that are appealing, especially to millennials, like Blue Apron, where you can get, you know, here's a box of food, make it. How do you see your guys in comparison to that? Is that, like, I know you're starting to do more with recipes on your website.
Mm-hmm.
So just talk about how you guys fit into that sort of mold as well.
Yeah, I think we're actually really similar to companies like HelloFresh and Blue Apron. But we actually joined one this winter for the first time, tried some out. It was more like market research, but I wanted to see what all the fuss was about because I knew that we were a similar concept. And you get this really beautiful box delivered to your door. I think what it speaks to as a customer, it speaks to the number one, to the convenience, because you don't have to go to the store and actually get your meal. It just comes to you. I think it also, it's beautiful. So there's this aesthetic appeal. You open up, it's this fun food adventure. There's no waste, which is another key piece for people. They don't like wasting food. So every single ingredient that you need for the recipe is in there, down to the exact like half teaspoon of herb that you need.
Right.
So you don't feel like you're throwing away any vegetables or brought extra product. And it also teaches you how to cook. So, and it takes away the decision. It's like, this is what you're having. Oh, you just saved me a ton of time trying to figure out what to do with this food, right? So those are some things that are speaking to a very specific part of a customer. And those are appealing. So I like that. When I actually did it, I'm like, wow, this is kind of fun. Plus I was learning some cooking techniques along the way. I think if you're in that program for a while, it can actually train you in how to put a meal together. But what was missing, number one, that the taste of the vegetables is different. So, you know, we talk a lot about growing our soil, because when we grow great soil, the vegetables taste better. So there's not that same kind of quality of taste in the product. And I think the relationship with the farmer piece is missing. So with a CSA, you're actually seeing the farmer, and with a Blue Apron box, you don't know who those farmers are. They try to tell you a little story about some of their partner farms, but this is a giant organization. They're pulling from many different farms around the nation to pull this off. And so it's not that same intimate connection where you can come to your farmer's house and walk in his fields and have a hayride at his place. You know, it's a little bit different. And then I also think that the one thing that really, that I had a hard time with Blue Apron was they didn't have, there was a lot of waste in terms of like packaging. I mean, I got a box twice a week, and you get this huge, like two reusable gel packs. I mean, these giant ones, and you're like, oh, I guess I'm going to throw these away. And, you know, and there's all the plastic that everything comes in to make it look all pretty. And then I guess the box you can recycle, but there was a lot of plastic and these gel packs. I just started feeling really sick inside about how, well, maybe I'm not wasting two pieces of kale, but I sure am throwing away a lot of stuff into a landfill that's never going to compost.
And that
you know?
Goes back to,
so it's just a different.
And that goes back to the big picture that you guys are talking about, and knowing and trusting your farmer, and not, because even Blue Apron then is still convenience. You could get those things here. You would just have to search for them.
Yes.
Some of them. Obviously, you talk about things out of season that probably come in those.
Yeah.
But you can find those recipes and learn those things. So it's just, it's a bigger process.
Right. And, you know, and so a CSA also does a good job, I think, of providing those recipes like Blue Apron does, and saying, here's what you should do with your box. But it isn't like, this is the meal that you should do. Like, here's five suggestions and you can pick one and riff on it and make some adjustments. So you have a little bit more flexibility. That's a little bit different than what these subscription boxes will do.
It's more, even more than that, I think, too, because you're providing, we're going to be providing like exit strategies. Like, we're going to be providing like, it's not actual like a meal plan, but like, it's like these systems that you're able to implement into your, like, I would say probably three or four systems, like sheet pan meals. So if you're getting some products, you can always fall back on this sheet pan meal, because you know, you, that's an easy way to roast vegetables, for instance, you know. So there's different systems that we're putting into place, that it's not just these recipes. You know, we're giving good recipes, but like, we're giving people like tools to like have in their kitchen toolbox to be like, okay, I got this. I know, and here's my recipe. I can try those recipes, or I could just say, quick, okay, I've only got half hour. Here's a quick sheet pan meal. Throw it in the oven. Bam, done.
I think it's time to transition into this project that I was telling you about earlier.
Oh, okay,
right?
Go ahead.
Because he's starting to go that direction. But I think one of the things we're really excited about this season is that we have developed this roadmap to CSA success, because I did a ton of research this winter. I was on the phone with customers, interviewing them, asking them, hey, why do you love our CSA? I was talking to people who'd left our CSA for a while and came back, or people that are on the fence. You know, why are you, what are the things that the walls that you're running into when you start a CSA, so that I can come alongside you, a support person, and help you use our produce. And the things that I was getting back, I was getting all the hacks and the shortcuts that our CSA masters have learned over the years, and I was taking copious notes, and I was hearing from people that struggled with storage tips, like, man, my lettuce just goes to pot right away. What do I do with that? You know, I'm just writing all this stuff down, and out of all that research, I saw patterns, and I saw a pathway to so that if someone comes into our CSA for the first time, now I really feel like I have a training resource to provide you. I know what you need to learn, and I know what you need to learn first, and it's all mapped out, and I'm ready to launch it this coming season. So Kurt was just talking.
Awesome.
Kurt was just talking about sheep hand meals. Well, you know, we've identified after talking to our CSA masters, they have over the years developed these exit strategies for vegetables. So they go to recipes and they might look at things, but after a while, you sort of learn the formulas for things. You see all the different kinds of meals. There's soups, there's salads, there's sheep pan meals, there's, you know, grilling, there's fish with a side, there's frittatas, whatever. I mean, there's like 30 of these, right? There's smoothies, there's do-it-yourself vegetable broth with vegetable scraps. I mean, there's all these things that these customers do with their box. So when they're left at the end of the week with this bunch of Swiss chard and they're like, I don't know what to do with that, they just run it through this grid of vegetable exit strategies, these template meals in their heads. And now that I know what those are, and now that I know, man, I struggled my first year with storage issues. Okay, I need to teach you these five storage tips on the front end so that you know to take the tops off your carrots when you come home. That's the one thing you got to do or they're going to get floppy, right? So these kinds of things came back from our customers and it really gave us direction for how to teach people how to eat. So I feel like more than ever, our CSA isn't just going to be about, here's a box of vegetables. Thanks for supporting your local farmer. Yeah,
good luck.
Yeah. Now it's like, I'm pretty confident that if you follow this system and this roadmap and give it a go, we're going to transform the way you eat forever. You know, and that is a life skill that no grocery store, no Blue Apron will ever give you because you've got a guide walking alongside you. And we have this amazing Facebook community. We have a private Facebook group that has about 400 members in it. And it is so activated right now. I'm actually using my CSA masters. I'm going to their houses and we're doing live Facebook live videos from their kitchens. And they're teaching people how to make the perfect pan sauce, you know, or how to make this formula for a great smoothie. And these are we're tapping into our community, which I love, community supported agriculture, right?
Yeah.
So we're tapping into the resources in our community, the people who already know how to do this well, and they're training each other. And so there's this huge support group as part of membership where you can go to this group and say, I don't know what to do with this, help me. And then within like 5 minutes, there are 10 responses. So having that access to that foodie network,
right?
It's not just me as the guide, thank goodness, because I was a suburb girl who didn't know how to eat 10 years ago. But I've got this huge community around me. That's walking alongside me and helping coach these people to greatness.
And that's perfect because I feel like that is a big deterrent of even trying new vegetables. Because like, I don't know what to do with Swiss chard. I'm sitting here. I've watched Chopped, but I don't know what else on that.
And that's the thing is people who join our CSA say they want to try a variety of new vegetables. That's often one of the reasons they cite for joining. But then I don't think they really mean it because then they start getting them and they're like, oh, that's what you mean by different vegetables? Kohlrabi, arugula? I don't know if I like that. I'm like, no, listen, I know how to make this taste good. Let me show you what you can do with these. Or even if you don't like the taste, guess what? You can throw it into a vegetable broth and you know, make your own vegetable broth out of it. So there's so many cool things to teach people and I can't wait.
And that's really great because I think that's what, especially the audience that I'm trying to appeal to and teach, I think that's what they need. They need to have, once again, as we talked, they need to know where their food came from, have a relationship with it, and then know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big barrier for...
It's a lost skill, right? And I think people have grown up, for whatever reason, their parents just didn't intentionally teach this skill to them. Mm. And so you have this whole generation of people that are just in the dark. And there are some people that are finding interest in it, and they're learning it on their own, and they're rediscovering it. And so I kind of see it as my new mission to help reinform, you know, tell that story again to everyone so that we can recapture it and bring it back into our homes and just find the joy that comes from eating a great meal.
And for big picture, I just want to say, because I think it speaks to me as we've had this conversation, it sounds like at the end of the day, what you're sort of selling, quote unquote, is trust. I mean, it really is. You're trusting your farmer with what he's growing and what the quality is and things like that. I even heard you mention, you know, with Blue Apron, things not tasting right. I'm now rolling through my head like, do I know what a tomato is really supposed to taste like? Do I even know? So do you feel like that's part of your charge?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. That integrity piece, you know, that trust of looking somebody in the eye and knowing that that we are doing our best to produce the crops for you and to help you use those actual crops in your home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can, you know, the people that tend to be CSA customers, I know what they value. Number one, they value really great tasting ingredients. They care about taste. Those are the people we attract. They care about a relationship with a farmer. That's the number one thing. They want to know their farmer and where it comes from. And they want variety of food. That's probably the third most important piece. They want to be exposed to more than just the basic potatoes, carrots, and celery. Make me discover new things so that I can grow my horizons. I'm just going to go back to that phrase, transform the way people eat. I feel like that's our new vision. I mean, we've just really honed in on that. We don't want to just grow vegetables. That's a noble thing in and of itself. But we feel like it's our duty to help guide you through the process of eating those vegetables so that we can transform the way you eat forever.
Perfect. Well, guys, you've been great. I don't want to take up any more time in your day, but I feel like I just got an education in what farming looks like and certainly what local farming can look like. But before we go, I'm sure you have plugs and things that you want people to know about, how they can join the CSA, things like that. So why don't you tell us all the pertinent information for if people want to know more about Shared Legacy Farms?
Absolutely. So we have, we're currently in the middle of our CSA launch season. Our CSA starts on the week of June 11th. So you can join our CSA by going to our website, sharedlegacyfarms.com. And click on the sign up button there. You can also find us on facebook.com/sharedlegacyfarms. And we have an Instagram page, SLFarms2. We have about 35 CSA shares left. And I expect that those will probably be gone in about a month. So this is the kind of the middle of April. So if you're interested, I would definitely check us out. Bye.